Letters pop out from a white background, then turn red. Netflix. White block letters on a black screen. Netflix presents a Netflix original film. A Brownstone production. In association with Untitled Entertainment. A television news segment plays on a set in a home entertainment center.
Now, from your 24-hour news service, this is...
Based on a true story.
People in the Southwest are looking for relief from a deadly heat wave.
The TV plays to an empty living room in a 1990s middle-class home. Daylight is softened by sheer drapes behind a long floral couch. The couch is flanked by end tables holding tall lamps with stovepipe shades. Half-eaten scrambled eggs on toast are seen in detail, as is a piece of bread spread with preserves. A knife leans on the bread and a bite has been taken from it. A glass coffee pot hisses on a coffee maker warmer. Sharing a bookshelf with a set of encyclopedias is a framed photo of a white-haired woman in her 70s with a younger, sober-faced man and woman behind her.
You've reached the Mario Hairs. Leave a message.
Hey, it's Luke. It's 10 o'clock. Where are you? Everyone's here.
A wood-paneled home office is a bit out of date but orderly, with a computer and a tall cone-shaped desk lamp. The picture is behind the desk among shelves of books and knickknacks. A bearded young man saunters through the living room.
Hey, y'all. Gonna be a scorcher today.
He stops abruptly at the kitchen door. A chair is overturned. Two hefty dachshunds lap up food on the floor. San Antonio, Texas. A heavyset man and two women sit with their hands behind their backs on the edge of a bed. Black hoods cover their heads.
Where are we?
I don't know.
August 27th, 1995.
Mm-hmm.
The two women fidget.
It's all right, Red. We're going to get out of this. Garth?
Yes, Mother.
Did you get a good look at anybody? Recognize anyone?
No, Mother.
Shh, I think someone's coming.
They stop moving their bound hands.
Check their restraints.
You want to tell us what the hell we're doing here?
Shut up.
You tell me to shut up? I don't think you know whose weeds you're pissing in, buddy.
I said shut up.
I heard you. I chose to ignore you. Who are you working for, huh? Did Jerry Falwell put you up to this, huh? The Baptists? That it?
Mother, please.
I think we're good. All right, let's go.
Cocksuckers are not going to get away with this.
The men walk out.
Don't you know who I am?
A bold white title appears. The most hated woman in America.
God damn it.
Austin, Texas, a police cruiser blocks the driveway where a black sedan sits. Behind is a modest home.
So, Mr. Collier, you say the cars are gone now. Shouldn't they just be in them?
The door was open, breakfast on the table, and they'd never leave without the dogs.
The detective glances around.
You say that this lady lives here with her son and his daughter?
Yes. No, the granddaughter's from her other son.
It's an interesting living arrangement.
Collier shoots him a look.
Wait a minute. Madeline Murray O'Hare, that's who we're talking about here?
He points to a clipping on the refrigerator.
Are you sure that this isn't just another one of her publicity stunts?
Aren't you even going to take any fingerprints, sir?
He glares at the detective, who tilts his head.
Mr. Collier, this is Texas. Not against the law to go missing here.
Words appear, day one.
I loosen it. Come here. What? Give me your hands.
They turn back to back on the bed.
Just get it untied.
I can't.
You can do it.
Oh, my God.
That's it.
What kind of knot is that?
Come on, you can do it.
Well, get closer to me, then.
Oh, all right.
Jesus. Almost. I almost got... It's not you.
Jesus, Marion. Joseph, I knew I should have sent you to fucking Boy Scouts.
Well, I don't know what you think you're gonna do anyway. They both have guns.
Oh, if we could get these hoods off, we might have a better idea of what we're dealing with. Come on, try again.
No. Stop it.
Don't you disobey your mother.
Or what? You gonna take me over your knee?
Yes, I just
stop
might.
Stop it, both of you.
Red leans over to them. Garth and his mother sit shoulder pressed against shoulder.
God damn it, I have to pee.
Hey, people! If you don't let me out of here, I'm gonna piss all over your floor!
A sinewy, bearded man enters with a handgun. He scowls at her and faces them against a low dresser.
Lady, you're gonna need to calm down.
Calm down? You want me to calm down? Shit for brains. In case you hadn't noticed, we got bags over our heads. We're all tied up. And I gotta pee.
You do what we say and everyone gets out of here safe and sound.
Oh, now that sounds like the big man in charge. Is that the big man in charge?
A cigarette dangles from the lips of a handsome, slickly dressed guy.
You got the balls to take me on?
Jesus Christ.
He pulls off Garth's hood.
What's going on?
Red's hood comes off.
Garth, what's going on? Oh, my God.
Robin.
My God, is that who I think it is?
The old white-haired woman stares slack-jawed while the leader takes a long drag from his smoke. The captives are the three people in the office photo. The leader smiles.
Hello, Madeline.
In an office suite, Collier stands to one side while a group of staffers confer.
This is Bill Murray.
Bill, it's Roy. Roy Collier.
What do you want?
It's your mom and Robin and Garth. They've disappeared.
Bill is in a suit and tie.
I just saw them in Dallas.
I'm not kidding. The police said that in order for somebody to officially be considered missing, they need somebody in the family to file a report.
Why would I do that? Besides, they're probably off on some crazy trip again.
Oh, this is different, Bill.
Roy, you know they're not in my life anymore. And frankly, I'd like to keep it that way. Okay?
Bill.
Roy freezes with an old-style cell phone at his ear. He closes it. It's daytime at the entrance to the San Antonio Daily Journal as people file in or linger outside. A bearded, dark-haired man chews on a rib at his desk.
Ferguson, I need those 600 words on the Alamo anniversary by 5.
Relax, man. It's the same story I wrote last year and the year before that.
Well, can't help it if nothing ever happens in San Antonio.
No, plenty happens in San Antonio. I just don't get to write about it. Where are you going?
He turns, but the editor walks away. Ferguson puts down his lunch and sucks his fingers.
Jack Ferguson.
This is the reporter.
Good day.
You know Madeline Murray O'Hare? She's disappeared.
Madeline Murray O'Hare?
The damn cops won't do anything. Only thing I could think to do was call the reporter.
Who's this?
Name's Roy, but I gotta go. If you want to know more, come by 1682 Greystone Drive tonight.
What?
I'll be there.
Hello?
Ferguson holds the receiver away from himself, frowning at it. He retrieves a folder from a tall file cabinet. Madeline Murray O'Hare, Crusader for Atheism. The clipping has a photo of her in front of the Supreme Court building. Baltimore, Maryland, 1955. A pair of well-dressed ladies leaves one side of a duplex as young Madeline in a plain housecoat passes them with her little boy. They swap contemptuous looks. Then the women head for their cars at the curb. Later, she starts to serve food from a casserole.
Madeline?
She drops the spoon with an eye roll.
Bless this food to our use and us to thy service. Amen.
Amen.
I don't suppose you found a job today.
I hadn't injured you. I didn't get a law degree to be a damn receptionist.
You'd be lucky to be someone's receptionist. If I were you, I'd start praying.
How do you put up with them, Mother?
The question is, how do I tolerate you?
He smiles at her.
Living here for free, bringing a bastard into my house.
Don't you ever call my son that. Sweetie, why don't you just take your dinner and go on to our room,
I'm sorry, Billy boy. I was just trying to make a point about your mama.
The boy clears his dishes and leaves. Madeline glares at her father.
I've got a point I'd like to make.
What else is new?
No, this is important. Got an announcement. Getting another grandchild. That's right. Your precious daughter's got herself knocked up again.
Oh, honey, no.
Yeah, and the guy's kicked me to the curb again, saying it's not his. When I know for a fact it absolutely is his.
You're an embarrassment.
That's right. That's right. Walk away.
He storms out.
It's like they did.
She stays at the table and takes a bite. Afterward, Madeline enters the dining room as her mother clears the table and gives her a weary eye roll.
I'm sorry, Mother.
You want to tell me what happened?
I don't know. Condom broke?
You sure you want to keep it?
She gives her mother a sharp look.
I can take care of Pop, and you know how he loves little Bill, and hopefully he'll come around.
He's right. Got a law degree and no job and a kid and no husband. One thing I do have is judgment. I get plenty of that.
Maddie, you made a couple of mistakes, that's all.
You know, I see these housewives in their identical homes with their identical lives and...
She shrugs.
They disgust me, but sometimes I wish I could be like that. Wish I could live like that. But I can't.
I don't know what to tell you.
Just lie to me. Tell me everything's going to be all right.
her mother throws her arms around Madeline in a rocking embrace.
I could be a secretary.
She and Bill read on the porch.
Telephone operator.
You could tell Avon like this, right?
She sets down the paper, giving him an amused look.
He's too damn smart for these eggs.
What's going on?
Black protesters march past.
Yeah, but they're going to the White Tower restaurant.
Why?
Well, Billy boy.
She squints, watching them.
Not all people are treated the same in this world.
Because they're nonconformist? Yeah.
Well, you could say that, I guess. White Tower won't serve Negroes. So they're protesting.
And if they protest, will that make the White Tower serve them?
The owners of that place are damn racist. Makes me so mad. I bet they call themselves Christians, too.
Grandpa says you might find a job if you're more Christian.
Your grandpa's full of crap.
Grandpa says you're the one full of crap.
Excuse me?
Oh, you're always going on about what's wrong with people, but you don't do anything about it. You just complain.
She glowers at the boy, sitting up with her hands on her knees. On TV, a black and white logo for News TV 2 appears. In newsreel footage, a black woman pushes a child in a stroller.
Close to 100 demonstrators stepped out to protest the whites-only policy of the White Tower restaurant in downtown Baltimore. The activists were met with some resistance from supporters of segregation.
I think that as much as we regret it, integration is here, and I would like to be able to do as much as I can to prevent its coming.
But one white woman and her son actually showed up to march with the Negroes.
The owners of the White Tower restaurant should be ashamed of themselves. This is Baltimore, not Nazi Germany.
And what about you, young man? Why are you here?
I'm here because I don't like racists and because I'm a nonconformist like my mom.
That's my boy.
What were you thinking?
I was trying to teach your grandson a lesson. Judge not, lest ye be judged.
What about the neighbors?
How do you care what nosy old Mrs. Mosley thinks? You really are one selfish SOB. Just because you read the goddamn Bible every night, you think you're so high and mighty and moral. When there are people out there who are actually really, truly suffering...
You know, I've got some cold cuts.
Mother, it's all...
You have no right to lecture me about morality.
You can take your morals and shut them up your ass.
May the Lord have mercy on your soul, man.
Ooh, the Lord, I'm quaking in my boots. Where's the Lord when I got knocked up? Huh? Where's the Lord now?
She throws his Bible as Pup walks away. Her mother stares at her dumbstruck. The heavily pregnant Madeline sits down gracelessly and puts up her feet.
What, mother?
A marquee on TV reads, Billy Graham, New York Crusade.
I believe we need a spiritual revolution in America. We need a revolt against materialism. A revolt against crime. A revolt against the emphasis on sex. A revolt against the...
It's like I keep telling you, it's just case after case down there.
Such a shame.
And then I've got this Negro girl with a baby who got thrown out of her home, and there is no place to put her.
Baltimore, Maryland, 1960.
Just a sec, Bill. No idea why I went into social work. I thought I could help people. I can't. There's too much red tape. Jesus, Mary and Joseph, I said just a sec.
Billy walks out.
Now you'll be good for Grandma, right, Garth?
Garth's a toddler on his grandma's lap. Pup watches TV in the next room.
And I better not come home and find my son watching that claptrap with you.
I don't want him getting any ideas.
She puts her finger in her father's face, then brushes back her hair as she exits. He turns back to the set. She gets into a small yellow car with Billy.
I'm gonna get in trouble again.
It's not my fault. You missed the bus.
They look at each other.
Okay. All right. I'll talk to the teacher if I have to, okay?
From the far end of a locker-lined corridor, Madeline yanks open the door.
We are not making a habit of this. Cops are getting up right now. What the hell is that?
Oh, don't tell me that's the Lord's Prayer.
Yeah.
What are you, gotta be kidding me?
They make us say it every day.
She stops.
They make you read the Bible, too?
Uh-huh. I told the teacher I don't believe in prayer and asked to be excused.
What'd she say?
She said we all have to bow our heads and pray.
She marches behind him.
And the power and the glory.
What the hell's going on in here?
Excuse me?
If I wanted my son to learn the Lord's Prayer, I would have sent him to goddamn Catholic school.
Mrs. Murray.
Ms. Murray.
Ms. Murray.
The teacher beams.
This is our morning devotion.
Well, I would like my son excused from the morning devotion.
You don't want him to...
Mm-mm.
I've never heard of anything like this in my life.
Well, Mrs. Lutz, is it? My son, like myself, is an atheist. Isn't that right, Bill?
Uh-huh.
I cannot excuse your son from the morning devotion. It is required by the board, and it is the law.
The law? Have you heard about the Constitution by any chance, kids? I hope she's not teaching you history, because apparently she flunked that class. In the Constitution, there is something called the First Amendment, and that protects the freedom of speech and religion. Are there any Jews in the class? Do your parents know that you are being forced to recite this archaic dribble?
Ms. Murray!
I'm just trying to make a point.
Obviously.
The school board cannot force my son to pray, or anyone else for that matter.
So, sue them.
Madeline looks at her with a jolt. Day one. A forlorn rust-colored motel advertises long-term vacancies. A van sits in the parking lot.
First of all, can I just say, it is wonderful to see you all again.
In the present...
Garth! You lose a few pounds, you're looking good.
The leader leans against the TV.
Robin, do you miss me?
Robin scowls.
For fuck's sake, David, get to the point.
Hey, I'm with you. I want to keep this reunion as brief as possible. So, here's the deal. Tomorrow...
Wait, tomorrow? What about the dogs?
Tomorrow...
He coolly waves a hand through the air.
You're going to write us a little check, and then we will be happy to get you the hell out of this place.
A check.
She shakes her head.
I'm going to make this easy on you, Madeline. What we want is just a drop in the bucket.
And what is that?
$1 million.
For fuck's sake.
It's not a fucking joke, lady.
Listen, I don't know what this guy's told you, but my organization is a non-profit organization. There's
in
no money.
In theory, American Atheists is a non-profit, but we both know that there are a few offshore accounts that will not bear that out.
Madeline and Garth look at each other. Her face grows serious.
New Zealand, for example.
Her lips part and she adjusts herself on the couch. She levels an unbroken stare at David. Ferguson can be seen approaching through a slightly open door. He peeks inside.
Hello?
He nudges the door and comes in.
Hello?
Roy extends a hand to shake over a file box.
Mr. Ferguson, Roy Collier. I work for Madeline.
Where did you get my name?
You covered our protests of the courthouse nativity scene last Christmas. Thought you could use a real story for once.
All three of them, they lived here?
They were inseparable.
Ferguson takes it in.
Nobody thought that was kind of weird?
Trust me, there's a lot of weird shit going on in this family. Mr. Ferguson.
Call me Jack.
Jack, I think something really bad's happened here. But nobody seems to believe me.
Not even the people at American Atheists?
No, she's done this before. Disappeared for a few weeks, popped up in Mexico. They think this may be another one of her fundraising ploys.
I'd be inclined to believe them.
No, she would have left me instructions. And she never would have left the dog's bone.
Okay, look, Roy, this isn't really my area of expertise.
Then why did you come?
Well, I thought there might be a story here.
Roy sits up holding passports.
Jackpot.
Roy stands and goes to Jack holding out the rubber band wrapped passports.
Passports.
He gives them a shake and hands them to the reporter. Jack takes them stonily, frowning as he looks at them.
Still doesn't prove that they're not just out of town.
Roy slings him an irritated glance.
Okay, let's say you're right. Let's say they were kidnapped.
Or worse.
What about Robin's father?
Bill Jr.?
Yeah.
He hasn't spoke to his family in years. His ass won't even file a missing persons report.
Well, then he should be at the top of your list.
No. Bill and his mom may have had some issues, but he would never do anything like this.
Well, then who would?
Are you kidding? Do you know how many death threats this woman will receive in a day?
No.
Day two. At the motel, David and his men watch Garth talk on the phone.
Sure. No, I know. Well, I...
Madeline hobbles past behind him and sits.
Yeah, no, I do know Mr. Epstein from the Austin branch, right?
Garth, come on.
Good morning.
Okay, Yep, right, we'll talk then. Bye-bye.
Robin comes in with coffee for herself and Madeline. A young, dark-haired man sits at the table with them while the gunman is beside David eyeing Garth.
I can only get 600,000. That's what's in our personal account.
What? Where is the rest of it?
Dummy twists.
Is it dummy what now?
They have to wire it here, the 600 grand from New Zealand, next week.
Next week?
And I have to sign for it in person.
The gunman stares wild-eyed at Garth.
Are you lying?
Gary, calm down.
I'm calm. He's a big boy.
You didn't plan this very well, did you, David?
I am in no mood for a jerk-off contest. Do I need to remind you who's holding the guns here?
He shows the weapon. Madeline holds up her hands.
Everybody just needs to settle in and try and get along. Looks like we're gonna be roommates for a few days.
You don't think the police are gonna be looking for me?
No, Madeline, I don't think anyone's gonna be looking for you.
She gives an irritated look while Robin squeezes her shoulder. In his office of dark wood and heavy beige drapes, Bill signs papers with another man.
William Murray, Jr.
Mr. Murray, Jack Ferguson, San Antonio Daily Journal.
I don't give quotes on my mother, Mr. Ferguson. I assume that's what you're after.
Sort of. I'm looking into your family's disappearance.
Did Roy Collier call you? Let me give you some advice, Mr. Ferguson. Don't waste your time. You don't want to look like a fool when they suddenly show up.
Roy seems to think this is different.
Well, I guess it's possible they finally left the country for good. They've been putting money from American Atheists into offshore accounts for years.
Embezzlement.
My mother prefers to call it creative accounting. Now, if you'll excuse me, Mr. Ferguson.
One question. The dogs. Roy said that they took them everywhere.
Sure, she treats those things better than her own family.
Well, that's why he's so worried. They left them behind.
Bill frowns sharply, setting down his pen.
Goodbye, Mr. Ferguson.
He hangs up the phone, a crease in his brow. Baltimore, Maryland, 1961. In the quaint Murray home, a TV title reads, South Vietnam troops counter Red attacks.
Madeline, I just don't get this. I still can't understand why those children can't say one little prayer.
Well, they can pray all they want to. School can't force them to.
Okay, Maddie. But can't somebody else fight this? Why does it always have to be you?
Why not me? This is important.
I'm just so worried about Pop. His health isn't what it used to be.
Well, you better start a goddamn praying, because we're going to take this all the way to Supreme Court if we have to.
Madeline, her mom, and Pup leap from their seats. Oh, Billy. Teenage Billy comes through the front door, his eye and cheek bruised.
You go to hell!
Man.
Two boys Billy's age drop a rock and take off. Madeline turns to him. Billy sits outside facing the street in the waning moments of the day. Madeline joins him. She sits close to him and daubs at his bruised cheek with a washcloth. He pulls his head back at the touch.
Come on.
He gently pushes away her hand.
Why didn't you tell me?
The kids at school? I can handle it.
You think so?
Yeah, they ambushed me. Still got a few good elbows in there, though.
What about the teachers?
They're ignoring me. I won't call on them anymore.
She shakes her head and looks down.
I don't know, Billy boy. Maybe we ought to drop this. To worry about you. Your name is on this lawsuit. This fight, it's got to be your choice.
We're in this together.
He smiles slightly.
Nonconformist, remember?
She nods, fighting tears.
Nonconformist. Sweetie, we pull this off, we're gonna be goddamn revolutionaries.
She pats his shoulder and he nods, forcing a half smile. A TV image reads special report.
David Brinkley's journal, usually presented at this time, will not be seen tonight, so that we may bring you the following special program.
Washington, D.C., June 17th, 1963. An 8-1 decision of the U.S. Supreme Court declared prayer in school unconstitutional. The judgment, the results of a case against the Baltimore public school system, stirred protests across the nation.
Senator Herman Talmadge.
Offensive to everyone who wishes to keep this a religious nation.
As demonstrators ascended on the Capitol, President Kennedy did his best to defuse the controversy.
I think that it is important for us that we support Supreme Court decisions even when we may not agree with them. In addition, we have in this case a very easy remedy, and that is to pray ourselves.
The plaintiffs in the case, self-described atheist Madeline Murray and her teenage son Bill, were unapologetic.
I don't understand why people are so upset. This is about religious freedom. You can still keep the faith, people. Just keep it to yourselves.
Baltimore, Maryland, 1964. Madeline cuts press clippings while her mother flips through a magazine.
Oh, this is a good one. The next thing you know, Madeline Murray will force the country to eliminate one nation under God from the Pledge of Allegiance. It's actually not a bad idea.
We should be clipping coupons, not articles. I cannot believe that the Family Aid Society fired you.
Well, it was a disgrace to the city of Baltimore, remember? In fact, they couldn't get crap done there anyway.
Here comes the hate mail.
Mother, it's not all bad.
Garth plops a canvas bag beside the table.
Thanks, sweetie.
Madeline reaches into the bag and brings a stack of letters to the table. The letter she holds is smeared with brown.
Here's shit in your eye. They got wit, I'll give them that at least.
Here, let me get it.
Oh, it's a good photo, I'm gonna keep it.
She sets it aside.
Ah, see, now there's someone who appreciates me.
It's a crisp, clean thank you card. She opens it and a $100 bill falls out. Madeline holds it up.
The Lord will provide.
I'll buy us some groceries.
Madeline holds it close to her face, thoughtfully studying it. In a montage, Billy rolls up a rug while his mom pushes the dining table to the wall as his grandmother looks on. Garth carries in a box.
Get me another one.
Billy transfers her briefcase from a box to her desk while Madeline sets down her manual portable typewriter. Newspaper clippings are masking taped to green floral wallpaper headlined Madeline Murray versus God and the Devil's Daughter. A nameplate on her desk reads American Atheist Madeline Murray President.
Madeline Murray, the woman who expelled prayer from schools, is stirring things up again. She held a rally at the University of Baltimore to promote her new organization, American Atheists.
I'm not trying to convert anyone here, and at no time have I said that people should be stripped of their right to believe in God. But as an atheist, I believe a good deed should be done instead of a prayer said, a hospital built instead of a church. We want disease conquered, poverty vanished, and war eliminated.
She speaks outdoors behind several microphones in a black and white newsreel. Copies of a newsletter, American Atheist, glide from a home printing press. Billy hands the copies to a teenage girl, and the two pause a moment to look at each other. She walks away, glancing back at him.
Another check.
The older woman hands the check to Madeline at her desk, who drops it into a box filling up with contributions. A newsreel.
Mad Madeline is at it again, this time filing suit with the Baltimore Public School System to remove the words "under God" from the Pledge of Allegiance.
Oh, we sure as hell aren't gonna win this one, but it's a fight worth having.
She's filmed on her living room couch with Billy, the teenage girl, and other volunteers behind them. A mailman walks away from the Murray porch. As he reaches the sidewalk, Billy and the teenage girl volunteer are seen kissing in the backseat of his mother's car. They watch Madeline pick up the mail, but she doesn't see them in the car in their underwear. They look at each other and resume making out. She presses one hand flat against the window. Madeline tears brown paper from a package. With a broad smile, she holds up Look magazine triumphantly to her volunteers. She's on the cover along with the title, The Most Hated Woman in America. She nods, raising her brows. Day 7. Jack opens a paper with the headline, Atheist Disappearance Sparks Rumors.
Page 6?
The police haven't even opened an investigation yet, and there are plenty of people who'd just assume never see that woman in Texas again.
Well, can I at least have a follow-up?
Right now, I need a story on the transit board's bus route overhaul.
Thanks, buddy.
Jack throws him an irritated over-the-shoulder glance. A video game plays on a TV screen. Garth sits on a couch with a controller while Gary watches. Robin comes out of the bedroom.
This is all they have.
She tugs at her baggy sweatshirt.
I think you look pretty hot.
Gary leers at her.
Hey, Gary, ever occur to you that your sole purpose in life might be to serve as an argument for birth control?
You know what, just ignore her. There you are. A little overcooked, just like you like them.
You remember.
She shoves away the eggs.
I figure the least we could do if we're all stuck here together is be civil.
I wouldn't spit in your ass if your guts were on fire. That's civil enough for you?
Come on. I'm having a good time. Who else is having a good time?
Yeah, sure, I guess.
Garth.
I mean, he got us video games.
He's right. I brought you your medicine. I got you a change of clothes. I'd say for kidnappers, we are damn near hospitable.
This is much better than prison, trust me.
Oh, Gary was in prison. How come I didn't see that coming?
You know, you just can't seem to shut the fuck up.
I bet you saw more cock in the slammer than a urinal at the Astrodome.
Hey,
go ahead and suit me. I'm an awfully big body to hide.
Gary, put the gun
Open
away.
Up, Grandma. Keep talking.
Gary.
No, be funny, please. Fucking Grandma. Do it.
Gary, please.
They're frozen in place, David blocking Gary and Madeline behind David's shoulder. He lowers the gun.
So tough now, huh? You're gonna owe me.
Oh, fuck you.
Madeline and Robin head for the bedroom, ushered along by Garth, who shoots a frightened, indignant look at Gary. The young kidnapper enters. As he shuts the door, he looks Dave in the eye.
Dave, we need to talk.
He heads off into the other bedroom.
Mother.
What?
Mother.
What?
Have you ever stopped to think that if they kill one of us, they have to kill us all?
This is bullshit, Garth. And I'm not letting him get away with it.
I know, but if we get the police involved, you know that the IRS is going to follow. And what they want, it's nothing. So let's just play their game for now, and we'll figure out a way to nail them later.
Yeah, yeah, he's right, Grandma.
Yeah, he's right. This one time, stop gloating.
David, cigarette hanging from his lips, reads Ferguson's story in the paper.
That's not good.
It's fine. They think they're in New Zealand.
You said 2 days, tops. And that woman, she's wound so goddamn tight. How the fuck are we supposed to keep him here?
Madeline's a cripple. She's not going anywhere. Robin would never leave her. Garth? Yeah. Garth can't piss without his mom holding his dick.
The younger man looks at Gary.
4 days. We get the money, we get out of town. Here. Get rid of the cars. Just to be safe.
The dark-haired kidnapper looks anxiously at the keys and leaves. Gary hunches on the edge of the other bed, looking at the floor.
David.
David glances away from the paper.
When this thing comes through, you're not really serious about letting them go, right?
David frowns, glancing sidewise at Gary. He holds his stare, then goes back to the paper, a long ash at the end of his cigarette.
He wants you to drop the story?
Well, he doesn't think there's much more to tell. Everybody seems to believe they took off for New Zealand.
I told you, they'd never leave
without the dogs. Yeah, you may have mentioned that before. You know...
Jack leans on the wall, arms folded.
I don't get it, Roy.
What?
Well, her own son doesn't seem to care that they're missing. Everybody else at American Atheists are pretending like nothing's happened. What makes you different?
You have any idea what it's like to grow up black and gay in Texas?
No.
Neither did Madeline. But it didn't matter. When my parents kicked me out, she was there to take me in.
He steps closer to Jack.
All right, look. The PI owes me a favor. I'm not promising anything, but I'll see if he can't dig something up.
Thanks.
Madeline shuffles to the slightly open door of David's room. Peeking in, she sees him sitting at a mirror in a white undershirt, rubbing lotion under his eyes.
Jesus, David. Just as vain as ever, huh? You sure you're not a homo?
You are the last person who should be lecturing me about vanity.
I'll lecture you about whatever I goddamn well please. And how you expect to pull this off, David?
I am willing to bet that after we get our money, you won't be calling the police. You wouldn't want to expose those hidden accounts of yours. In the meantime, why don't you take these next few days here as your own dark night of the soul? Time for a little self-reflection.
If anyone's in need of self-reflection, David, that'd be you.
She walks out. He jumps up to stand in the doorway behind her.
I bet Bill Jr. would beg to differ.
She stops and slowly turns to face him. He holds his stare as he closes the door. She turns away, scowling. Berkeley, California, 1969.
Our guest tonight is Madeline Murray O'Hare, the American atheist who removed the Bible from public schools. She's at the university for a speaking engagement. O'Hare. That's new for you, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I guess we all knew it'd take a real man to tame this shrew. And that's what I found in Richard O'Hare, a man, a real man. And I've got a granddaughter now, Robin. She's about everything I could hope for.
We've opened our lines to callers. Right now we have Charles from Sacramento. Go ahead, Charles.
Yeah, I want to ask Mrs. Murray.
Murray O'Hare.
How can you look at yourself in the mirror every day? You know, only a godless bitch like you would go to court to stop prayer. Thanks to you, this country's on its way to hell in a handbasket. Somebody just cut your tongue out, tie you up, and throw your lifeless corpse up the Golden Gate.
Thank you, Charles.
Don't these people have anything more to worry about? I mean, people are dying every day in this unholy war we're waging in Vietnam. And apparently this guy's more concerned with masturbating to my corpse.
Next up, we have Barbara from Mill Valley.
Ms. O'Hare, if you don't believe in God, how do you explain where we came from?
Oh. Lady, have I got to explain the damn birds and the bees for you? It's called sex. And you can bet the Virgin Mary was all for it. Virgin birth my ass.
Later, she and her family are escorted from KZMV Radio. People hold signs reading, God hates atheists, and I pray for you, Madeline.
Jesus loves you, Madeline.
Oh, and so does Santa Claus.
A man dressed like Jesus levels a gun at her. Another man grabs his wrist. Madeline and family are shoved into a car. Now, Billy and his wife are with her in the hospital.
Can you believe it? Jesus shot at me. Goddamn Jesus Christ.
Mother.
Oh, don't. All right. Well, I'm sorry I used that language again, Susan. I'll try to clean it up a little bit.
Mother,
Susan grimaces and looks at Billy as she leaves with Robin. Billy sits wagging his brows and thoughtfully glancing at the floor, frowning.
Mother, Susan and I have been talking.
Bill, no.
Well, I haven't even said what I'm going to ask yet.
You want to abandon me?
Please.
Bill, look at me. Some freak put me in the hospital.
You're fine.
They're treating me for nerve damage.
Billy sags, staring at her in blank disbelief. She turns away, patting his hand.
I'm sorry, you're right. I understand. Probably very frightening for you, and we shouldn't have dragged Robin and Susan through all this. When we get down to L.A., I'm going to get you a really nice hotel suite, and they can stay there.
Mother, I have a wife and a child now. I'm not sure this is the life that I want for them.
Eyes shut, she nods and gives a tight smile.
That's your decision.
All right. Mm-hmm.
I just don't know if I can keep up what I'm doing without you.
Oh. Well, you got Richard now?
All he's good for is fucking.
Mom.
He winces, turning away from her.
Remember that protest at White Tower? You couldn't have been more than 10. And that day you said to me, if something makes you really mad, you gotta go out there and do something about it. All my life, I just wanted one person somewhere, sometime, to understand me. And that person turned out to be you.
She squeezes his face gently. Mm-hmm. He smiles and she pats his cheek.
We're in this together. Hmm?
Looking her in the eye, he nods his head softly. Billy takes her hand with both of his. He looks at their hands, then looks away, but he does not look at her. Slouching, he leaves the room and steps up to Susan. His eyes are pained, and he gives her a shrug. She stomps away with the child, and he slumps against the wall. The set of a talk show sports a shag carpet, couch, and a detailed wooden desk.
From Hollywood, The Tonight Show, starring Johnny Carson. This is Ed McMahon with Doc Severinsen and the NBC Orchestra inviting you to join Johnny and his guests, Roger Miller, Steve Martin, and atheist Madeline Murray O'Hare.
Yeah, no, I told you it's enough, thank you. Where the hell have you been? I'm about to go on.
Susan filed for divorce.
Hallelujah. I knew it was going to happen. I told you so, didn't I? Huh?
Mother.
Oh, come on. You were over that fuss pot a long time ago. At least she didn't cheat on you like Richard did with me.
What about Robin?
No, don't you worry about Red. We'll get custody of her.
She throws an arm around his shoulder and sits next to him.
Oh, Billy boy, Mama's gonna take care of everything. All you have to worry about is taking care of me. And the cause.
She pulls him to her shoulder.
Why are people so emotional? Why do they put the battleground in the public schools and become so emotionally involved when people say, you mean they're not going to permit our children to start their daily schedule with a non-denominational prayer. Their argument, of course, is how can it affect anybody? It can't hurt.
Well, there is no such thing as a non-denominational prayer. If we have suddenly the Muslims take over and everyone would be required to say a prayer to Allah, why, they would be as much up in arms as
well,
they are now.
Freedom of religion does mean, does it not, freedom to follow any beliefs that you may wish, which also means the freedom not to believe.
That's right. I'm not going to let the church tell me what I can say. You know, I have a reputation for the use of the four-letter word, and I would like to talk tonight about the use of the four-letter word.
What, obscene words or...
Let me give you an example.
All right.
Johnny, you were recently married.
Mm-hmm.
And how about if you went to your wife and you grabbed her and said, may I have formal knowledge of you?
I don't remember using those exact terms.
Garth and Billy watch in the dressing room. Bill nips from a flask.
News to the fucking cause.
His eyes are puffy. He hiccups as the alcohol goes down.
And we will be right back. Stay with us.
Austin, Texas, 1979.
Austin has a new resident, and not everyone is happy about it.
A sign says, Jesus saves from hell.
This week, Madeline Murray O'Hare opened the doors of her new American Atheist Center to much protest.
Well, I couldn't take Baltimore anymore. Windows were broken and tires slashed. I was shot at several times. Drove my poor mother to an early grave, I do believe.
The center has a printing press, library, and recording studio for her syndicated radio series.
Oh, I do love a good fight, and taking on God and the church is, well, kind of the ultimate, isn't it? So, as long as there's a fight to be had, I'll still be a squeaky wheel.
She sits at a conference table surrounded by the now grown-up Garth, Robin, and several volunteers.
You watch and learn, Red. One of these days you'll be running this whole goddamn place. I'm going to help Sandy with the man.
Okay.
She watches everyone leave, but Garth then turns to him.
Where's your brother?
Garth shakes his head.
I haven't seen him.
Madeline looks at him disgustedly and leaves the office. She walks out of the glassed-in room. As she passes an office, she stops. She watches Bill behind a file cabinet pour whiskey into his flask. She purses her lips and shakes her head. He jumps.
11 o'clock in the morning, you little shit.
Fuck off.
Is this the kind of example you want to set for your daughter?
My daughter? The one you took custody of?
You're too drunk to piss your name in the snow, let alone take care of a child.
It doesn't matter. You can do the same thing to her that you did to me.
How is that supposed to mean?
She slaps him and he stands facing her with an anguished expression.
I want to live my own life, okay? I'm sick and tired of living your life!
What, were you gonna leave me? Like all the rest of them? After everything I've fucking done for you?
Mother, goodbye.
Billy boy!
As employees watch, Bill storms past the reception desk.
Bill, come back!
A segment of Donahue.
Atheist Madeline Murray O'Hare competing with, debating with, the man who brought the Bible to the B girls in New Orleans, the Reverend Bob Harrington. God and the Savior versus atheist Madeline Murray O'Hare.
Madeline, what exactly is it that you have against God?
First off, there isn't any. And second off, your God manifests itself through organized churches, your organized movement. And every single one of them, including you, is always interested in money. You show me once where Jesus Christ passed out a collection plate.
Now, Madeline, I see you here. And I hear you talking, and...
Bill watches, unshaven and disheveled. He chugs from a bottle.
Real bad.
I am so happy that I have lost all this
religious
nonsense.
Because where you're going is going to be a lake of fire.
He cocks back his arm and throws the bottle at the TV, but hits the wall.
You gotta be kidding me. What the hell do you care where I go, what I believe? I don't care what you believe in.
I want to bring you to God. I want to save
you. I don't want to be brought to God. I don't want to be saved, and I don't want Jesus. Thank you very much.
All right, we'll be back.
Bill rubs his hands over his face. On the set, Reverend Bob and Madeline wait beneath the spotlights. He puts a hand over his mic.
know, you and I could make money doing this.
I do okay, thanks.
Oh, sure. We both do okay. But together, we could do a hell of a lot better. You just give that a little thought, Madeline.
She sizes him up, then looks away. The bright lights of the Chicago theater shine.
They claim it's a first in the history of religion. Flamboyant New Orleans evangelist Reverend Bill Harrington has arrived in Chicago for a series of head-to-head debates with the infamous atheist Madeline Murray O'Hare.
The Reverend clutches his Bible.
Ladies and gentlemen, there is a devil among us. Let us all pray. Pray to save the soul of Madeline Murray O'Hare.
Save me?
She grabs
save
his Bible.
Me? The book. Oh, Jesus couldn't save himself. The New Testament? Oh, a load of bull written by a bunch of faggots.
She tears pages from the Bible.
Y'all know that? Jesus was as queer as a $3 bill.
Backstage, Garth sorts money into two stacks on a table.
Let's see what that looks like.
Yeah.
She checks a clipboard.
Oh, that's not bad.
You're on fire out there tonight, darling. Every time you tear into this Bible, I save another 50 souls.
Yeah, I know you like that bit.
I do. Let me see how the numbers are here.
He reads over Garth's shoulder.
Oh, not bad. We'll do better in Kansas City.
I'll burn the goddamn book in Kansas City.
Oh, praise the
Garth
Lord.
Garth hands him his stack.
Thank you, Garth. I'll keep praying for your soul, Madeline.
Yeah, I'll keep cursing yours.
You think we want anyone over?
No, I don't know, honey. Did you hear from your father?
Robin shrugs.
Oh, he'll be back. He's shit-faced. Needs his ass wiped. He just needs a little break. We'll see him again soon enough.
She leaves with her arm around her granddaughter.
This is over. How about we take a little trip?
I spent the last 20 years trying to escape the overpowering shadow of my mother.
Elsewhere, Bill and eight others sit on chairs in a circle.
While she was fighting the world, I was fighting for my life.
Clean and neatly dressed now, he fidgets with his fingers.
I didn't realize how bad it had got until I got out of Austin. I started locking myself in the bathroom every night with a bottle of whiskey and a bucket of ice. And then one night, I had this sudden rush of sorrow.
He unclasps his hands to gesture, then joins them again.
Because I understood. I understood the hatred, and the self-pity that she was feeling. Because that's what I was feeling.
He hits his fist onto his palm. He holds his emotions in check and looks at the man next to him.
I come here and I see others, much worse situations than me, and you overcome and you accept them. And that,
He looks at the other people, nodding resolutely.
That's what I'm gonna do. Hallowed be thy name.
He wipes his eyes.
Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. Forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever and ever.
Amen.
Amen.
Day 10. Jack chases Frank.
Frank, I need another day on the Riverwalk article. I just got a new lead on the O'Hare story. Frank, listen.
Jack.
Robin Murray's Porsche just turned up abandoned at the airport, and Garth's car sold to some guy out by Canyon Lake. I mean, come on.
He eyes Jack dubiously.
Follow it up.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Frank! I love you!
Frank disappears around a corner. Jack hurries off. A black and white of Garth's smiling face is on a table.
Nope. I didn't buy it from him.
You sure?
Positive. It was a short guy. He was younger, had dark hair.
Right. If I sent a sketch artist to your house, would you be willing to sit down with him?
Sure.
Thanks, Mr. Sparrow.
Collier in a headband looks away.
I don't get it.
What kind of religious nut goes off and sells a stolen car?
Well, maybe this isn't the work of a religious nut.
What do you mean?
Well, Madeline was stashing loads of cash, right?
He gives a vague nod.
Makes for the greatest motive of all. Greed.
Two people's hands hold cards. The view rises to show David reviewing his options.
This is just like the old days.
He used to let me win.
She's focused on her hand.
You are the boss. I had to.
Well, does that mean I'm supposed to let you win now? You do have the gun. And we all know what that means, compensating for a very small cock, right, Red?
That's what you always say, Grandma.
Oh, come on, Madeline, you can do better than that.
I don't waste my best lines on small-time crooks.
David looks up.
You're just as much of a crook as I am. Ripping people off in the name of your cause.
That is bullcrap. I have devoted my life to protecting the First Amendment. Things I've had to endure. I made a little money along the way. I deserve it.
You are so full of yourself, you can't see the fucking forest for the trees. While you're out fighting the world, you're making real enemies right under your nose.
You get a lot of that, Red? David Waters is lecturing me.
Your own son would tell you the exact same thing. And
he lays out his hand.
Gin.
Madeline folds her cards together and slaps them down, looking away, stung. Austin, Texas, 1984.
I led a life wasted without faith in the Lord.
A clean-cut David is interviewed on TV.
And I hope I can right some of the wrongs I caused. I see my mother as a sinner now. She demanded things of God, and when he refused her requests, she began to battle with him openly. Now all she cares about is getting wealthy by hating God.
Do you love your mother?
Oh, I love my mother. I forgive my mother. But I'm not proud of what she did to this country.
Do you pray for her?
I wish I could pray for her.
Turn it off.
But I'm afraid...
Robin grabs the remote. Collier and two volunteers watch through the conference room window. Madeline's head is bowed.
Sold out to the highest bidder, the goddamn church.
Mother.
She shakes her head.
I've been called every dirty name in the book. There's not a day goes by without a death threat. None of it hurt. This.
Garth looks at her, then puts a hand on her shoulder, bowing his head.
Garth, am I really that bad of a mother?
No. Mother, I will always be here.
Her mouth quivers.
We'll both always be here.
Robin puts her hand on Madeline's, who starts to weep. She touches the younger girl's cheek and pats her wrist. Her free hand is enveloped by both of theirs. Austin, Texas, 1991. David, in a suit and tie, waits in the American Atheist lobby.
Mr. Waters.
Collier stands in the doorway to the offices. David smiles at the young receptionist and is directed in.
Thank you, Roy.
Madeline greets David.
Miss O'Hare, it is a pleasure.
Oh, well, have a seat.
I saw you on Carson last week. I love the way you shut Billy Graham up.
Oh, thank you. It was a little easier than it looked.
Are you just being modest? That preacher's more full of shit than a Christmas turkey, that's for sure.
Oh, hell, he's more full of shit than a goddamn humpback whale.
David flashes perfect teeth. His eyes sparkle. She looks at his file.
So, you're here about the office management position?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, you sure you want to join us right now? We're holding this plate together with baling wire and chewing gum.
I have held together more with less.
My son Bill, he used to run the place, but he screwed me over.
She nervously rocks in her chair.
Oh, now those goddamn zombie 12-steppers got a hold of him. And do you drink, Mr. Waters?
I do have a few of the usual vices.
Oh, good. I do not go in for that teetotaling crap.
She puts a finger of whiskey in each glass and hands one to David. He holds it up for a silent toast, conveyed with a warm stare and smile.
It has been mentioned that you spent some time in the Illinois State Pen.
Just a few petty crimes when I was younger.
He frowns thoughtfully. Madeline raises her brows and nods, then grabs the bottle.
Well, if Hail Marys really could absolve us, we'd all be goddamn murderers.
His face lights up in a chuckle as she refills his glass. They salute with the drinks.
Now, the first thing she wants you to do is help get the books in order. We usually get the statements from Bank of Austin on the 3rd of the month. This is where we keep the ledger. You'll have the only key besides me. You register all process checks here.
Wait, these are all donations?
That's right.
He studies the files.
There's a check here for $20,000, another for $12,000.
I know. In God we trust. Right?
In an office behind them, Robin and Garth watch David as Collier puts the key into David's breast pocket and hands him a data printout.
Good luck.
Collier leaves. David's brow furrows as he surveys the papers he's holding. Day 11, Robin comes into Madeline's room where she reclines in bed. She sits on the bed.
What's going on?
The money made it out of New Zealand.
She struggles to sit up.
It'll be long now.
She comes into the other room, leaning on her cane.
It's about time.
Gary comes out of the other bedroom, and David hands him a key.
Van's out back.
Gary gives Garth a contemptuous look.
Garth, you try anything, anything. Madeline and Robin are dead.
No, I got it.
Let's go.
David holds a handgun.
Bye, Mother.
And be careful, Garth.
Okay.
David, glaring, plops down opposite Madeline on the couch. She bristles.
You know those bills are gonna be marked.
They're getting a cashier's check. Then we're using that to buy gold coins. Something that can't be traced.
He has a foot on the coffee table, the gun resting on his knee. Madeline slowly looks at him.
Here you go, Grandma.
Thank you, darling.
Robin hands her a mug of coffee. Madeline's eyes sharpen to a glare directed at David, then she turns away. Austin, Texas, 1993, nighttime.
Well, it looks like you might have me here.
She and David play cards.
Night.
A worker clicks off a lamp and leaves.
Wait a minute. Vin.
She flashes a sly look. He winces and frowns and his lips tighten.
It went next time.
Sure, I'll win one of these days.
He unscrews the bottle and pours himself a drink.
Done a real good job here, David. I want you to know I did some digging into your record.
She shuffles the cards in her hands.
True you were picked up for hustling?
His face falls and he closes his eyes. His mouth hangs open.
I told you I'm trying to put all that behind me.
I don't give a shit what you do with your pecker. But David...
She leans toward him, her gaze focused.
You killed the man.
His eyes widen and dart away from her.
Tell me about it.
She sits back.
Just between us.
I didn't have a picture-perfect childhood, Madeline. My mother was a prostitute. And she was in and out of prison so much that I did whatever I had to do to survive. I hooked up with this gang. I started stealing here and there. And this guy we were with got caught after this liquor store job we did. He turned on me. I may not believe in God, but I do believe in karma.
All that crap about past lives.
All right. Maybe not karma.
His eyes go from the drink to her.
Retaliation.
She listens, scowling.
I was going to teach this guy a lesson. But when I started with that tire iron, I don't know, I just...
His eyes focus on a faraway place.
I lost control.
He turns to her, cigarette smoke coiling around him.
I got 30 years, but I only did half. Got out for good behavior. And
And I swore I would never lose control again.
He takes a draw from his smoke. Madeline gives him a rueful smile and nods her head.
Thank you. Thank you for telling me the fucking truth. Yeah, you live long enough and you lose faith in people. Not that I ever had much faith in anyone.
But she raises an index finger.
You have impressed me, David. Sort of wish Bill Jr. could have turned out more like you.
He really hurt you, huh?
He betrayed me. That's what men do. Betray me.
David eyes her, his mouth tight.
But no, David. He didn't hurt me. Nobody can really hurt me.
With a weak smile, he looks at her over his hand of cards.
Now that I trust you, I want to show you this one.
With a jerk of her head, they rise with Madeline leading. With a single key, her hands unlock a low file cabinet.
I'm giving you a promotion, David. So far, you've been keeping track of most of our donations in the official ledger book. I say most of them because this is our unofficial ledger.
She opens it for him on her desk, her eyes never leaving him.
And I'll keep your secrets, you keep mine.
He grins at her as he studies the file. Day 12. The young kidnapper plays a video game while David smokes and watches the screen. Both turn as Gary comes in with Garth. Gary shuffles forward sheepishly. Gary takes some coins from his jacket pocket, tossing one to David. David holds and turns it in his fingers. He looks up and smiles at Gary.
Where are the rest? In the trunk.
Well, at least $400,000 of it is.
David's grin disappears.
400? Gary, what the hell?
The fucking guy didn't have enough. We get the rest next week.
David closes his eyes. His lips tighten shut. He leans forward, elbows on his thighs, then rubs his temple. He smashes the video console to pieces on the coffee table. Madeline and Robin peek through the door. Garth stares, frowning.
Is that really necessary?
No, oh, don't tell me it's another hiccup.
We have to wait for another shipment of coins.
What?
They'll be here next Tuesday.
Oh, it's getting ridiculous.
David rises.
Shut up. You're not in charge here.
All right, I got it. You're the big boss. But God damn it, David, if you aren't fucking up this job like everything else you've ever done.
Mother!
He pushes into her and puts the gun in her face.
If I shot you in the head right now, do you think anyone would care? The state of Texas would probably give me a fucking medal.
He gives her a molten glare. She goes back into the bedroom. In Madeline's office at night, Jack pores over papers with Collier at the computer.
Look at this.
The reporter stares at the screen.
$625,000 is missing from the New Zealand account. Withdrawn right after they disappeared.
Bill Murray reads the paper at his desk. O'Hare mystery deepens. $625,000 missing. He winces, his brows deeply creviced. One hand goes to his face.
I say we take the coins we got and get out of town.
David reclines on the bed.
They've got nothing. If anything, this is just further proof that they took the money and ran. Oh, fuck.
Gary sits and bounces his leg.
We've got two more days before the second shipment comes through, and we have come too far to let a second page story get in our way.
He lights a fresh cigarette and gives Gary a piercing stare. Jack pinches at his dark beard.
Well, thank you for finally coming in here, Bill. Appreciate it. When you told me about the dogs, I knew something wasn't right. So why did it take you so long to file a report? It's complicated. My mother turned my own daughter against me.
His brows push together and he squints. Jack waits patiently.
What did the cops say?
They told me they would get back to me if anything turned up.
Wish I could say I was surprised. So I sent a sketch artist down to work with a guy about Garth's car. Should have something soon. I would love for you to take a look.
Of course.
Bill stands.
Oh, this money that's gone missing. You have any idea who could have had access to that? Accountants, lawyers?
All her finances were done in-house at American Atheists. You know, if somebody did something to them, it's probably someone from that place. My mother pissed off a lot of people. Especially those she was closest to.
He arches a brow and walks away. Austin, Texas,
1994. Excuse me, just want to say American Atheists has had a wonderful year, and that would not be so without all of you. So thank you, and a very happy winter solstice. Strike up the carols!
A festively attired Madeline raises her champagne glass.
Mother loves Christmas. She really, really does.
Oh, and you in your sweater. So, darling, get me a refill, Dorothy.
Of course.
Check on those cookies.
Okay.
David has a captive audience.
The membership numbers are down, but the money is not. The way Madeline gets these rich, dying atheists to leave her their entire estates, it's a hell of a way to make a living.
Collier stares incredulous.
She's not going to live forever. And I don't know what she did to Bill, but if I was him, I would have suffered through until she kicked the bucket, and then I would have taken the whole thing for myself. I mean, Garth's not going to take over. Can you imagine? Hello, people. We need to stop fighting for the freedom of religion.
Not funny, David. See anybody laughing?
She takes his glass and hands it to Collier.
No more for him.
His mouth hanging open, David watches her walk away. He takes a long drag from his cigarette and sets it in an ashtray, then hurries off.
Madeline, sorry.
I don't want to hear your excuses. Right now, all I want out of you is breathing. Very little of that.
Come on. Just had a little bit too much to drink.
Oh, I am assuming it was the drink talking. Otherwise, I would fire your ass.
What? You want to get rid of me? Go ahead. But I know a lot of secrets about the American Atheist. Secrets that might interest the IRS in particular.
Are you threatening me? Go. Tell the IRS whatever you want. Scream it from the mountaintops. You think they're going to believe a fucking felon? Get out of here. You're ruining my holiday party.
Fuming, he watches her hobble down the hall and into the cluttered bathroom. She steps up to the sink and watches him in the mirror as he comes in.
You really can be pathetic, you know. You just want to be the mama I never had. Give us both a second chance. Well, let me tell you something about my mama.
His nose is in her hair.
I beat the shit out of her. I beat her to a bloody pulp. You think your son Bill hurt you? No. Not like I hurt her.
She pushes him away and hurries out. She storms back into the party.
George! Davis Waters is a convicted felon. He's a murderer. And his mother was a goddamn whore. And she's not the only one that sucked cocks for money. Isn't that right, David? Isn't that right?
He grabs her.
Don't fuck with me, Madeline. Don't fuck with me.
Garth and another man pull him away.
Son of a bitch.
David is shoved hard out the door. He straightens up and slowly turns back toward the house. He heads off away from the brightly lit and festively decorated porch. Day 14. David, Garth, and Robin stare at the TV. David absentmindedly munches a snack, his bare feet propped up on the trash-strewn coffee table.
We got beer, vodka, cigs.
Finally.
He throws the cigarettes to David.
Hope you didn't forget about me, Danny.
David gets up. Danny shakes the bag.
No, I did not.
Oh, hey.
He goes into Madeline's room where she's alone resting against the bed's headboard. She pulls a half gallon of whiskey from the bag and Danny smiles sweetly.
Sorry, it ain't a martini.
It's the good stuff.
She pours some in a coffee cup.
I'm Billy Boy. And he used to mix a mean Manhattan.
Danny glances behind, then back to Madeline. She hands him another coffee cup.
Here's to new friends.
He takes it from her.
Yeah, all right, Danny Fry.
The young man sits on the bed.
You know, I'm real sorry we're putting you through all this.
That's not you. It's David. I'd wash your ass around him if I were you. You know, I trusted him. Look where it got me.
He thinks for a second, then fumbles for his wallet.
I'm heading to Florida next week. My daughter's 5th birthday. And using my take to set up her college fund.
She smiles at the picture and nods.
She's awful sweet. I'm lucky to have you for a father.
Thanks.
And family is all we got.
Danny puts away the picture and she takes another drink. Day 15. Bill, wearing a dark suit, hesitates at the entrance to the family room, then shambles along, his arms loose at his sides. He strolls past the bookshelf, taking in everything with his eyes. A newspaper can be seen up close with a photo of teenage Bill and his mother outside the Supreme Court building. He picks it up. The headline reads, "Atheist Dallas Convention to be countered by religious son of leader."
Jack just called. He has a sketch of the guy who sold Garth's car.
Now, Bill and Collier sit as Jack opens a manila envelope. He glances at a paper and slides it across to the other men. They look at it.
Who the fuck is that?
The sketch looks like Danny Fry. Danny packs a duffel bag while David lies on the bed, his headphones plugged in and a night mask over his eyes. Danny glances over at him. From the shower, Robin's hand snatches a towel on the sink. In a reflection from the bathroom mirror, the door opens and Gary stands leaning on the door jamb. Robin steps from the shower wrapped in the towel.
Get out!
Gary wobbles on his feet but straightens, staring at the door. He swigs his beer. Danny watches as he turns and shuffles away. Danny's eyes dart left to right and his lips are parted. He finishes what he's doing and leaves. In the car, Danny holds a stamped letter.
Bob Fry, we have a message.
Hey, Bob. It's Danny. I was actually just headed back to Florida just now, but I've got a couple things I got to tie up still here in Texas, so I'm going to be sending you a letter, and if you could just hang on to it for me, that'd be great. Okay, thanks. Bye.
He stares thoughtfully for a moment, then leans back against the headrest. Car lights move past in the dark. Madeline cuddles with Robin in the bed, the young woman's head against her shoulder. Garth, in a dark-colored sweatsuit, hauls his large body next to them. He turns off the lamp next to him. Madeline's light is still on.
All right. Yes, Mother.
I know you don't like me very much.
Garth faces away from them.
That's not true, Mother.
She frowns.
Well, you call me names behind my back.
You mean like fat cunt?
You call me fat cunt?
Yeah. Well, you've called me worse.
I suppose.
It doesn't mean anything, you know that.
Well, how about you, Red? You hate me for taking you away from your father?
You didn't take me away from him.
She rubs the redhead's shoulder and stares at the ceiling, her expression pained.
I was too hard on him. Too hard on all of you.
You're only hard on us because you believe we can be great.
Madeline smiles at her.
I love you too. Huh? Everything I've ever done, I've done for you kids. Bill, too.
She licks her lips.
What do you say? When we get out of this, we take a drive down to Dallas and visit your father.
Robin rises on one elbow.
Are you serious?
I am. And if the bastard refuses to see us, well, I'll just bang down the goddamn door.
Now that I'd like to see.
She squeezes Garth's arm and rubs Robin's back. Madeline turns out her light. Garth turns his head away. Madeline worries her fingers against the fabric of Robin's t-shirt staring into the dark. Gary snoozes on the couch, cradling his bottle and holding the gun as Danny comes in with the duffel bag over his shoulder. Gary blinks drowsily. Danny goes back in the bedroom where David is. Gary stares forward, bleary-eyed but alert. A view over the bed shows an awake Robin as Madeline and Garth on either side of her sleep. Carefully, she sits up between the two and pulls herself out from under the covers. Bare-legged, she crawls to the foot of the bed. Coming out of the bedroom, she stops at the sight of Gary asleep on the couch. She turns around and pulls the door shut as quietly as she can. Gary's face fills the view. Robin appears unfocused behind him, opening the refrigerator door. She takes out a carton of milk. Gary's eyes open. She takes a cup and pours milk into it. A hand sets the gun beside her cup. Gary has slid up behind her. He turns her around and she looks up at him.
I'm gonna miss you, Red.
Don't call me that.
He tries to lift her top.
No.
Their eyes lock.
No.
He pulls her away from the sink. The screen goes black. A younger Madeline's picture appears superimposed over a church steeple.
She called herself the most hated woman in America. Tonight, the incredible case of Madeline Murray O'Hare.
The title reads, The Most Hated Woman in America.
In 1963, Madeline Murray O'Hare found the cause that would make her famous, and some say, rich. She filed a lawsuit against the Baltimore Public School Board. The case would go all the way to the Supreme Court in a landmark ruling that banned prayer in schools. Over the next three decades, no one person has been thought a bigger threat to religion.
Chad Martin reports.
In 1995, Madeline was 77 years old, in failing health, and likely would have spent her remaining years in relative obscurity. Except that before she could die, the nation's most famous atheist suddenly vanished.
Well, the thing that strikes you is there was no panic when the Murray O'Hares disappeared. There was no real effort to find them. Yet, there was over $600,000 missing, Robin's car was abandoned, and another was sold by the mysterious stranger.
Mark Sparrow answered the ad in the newspaper and thought he'd found a steal of a deal since the car was priced $5,000 below Blue Book value.
Naples, Florida, 1998. A man watching leans toward the TV when the police sketch of Danny appears.
The car was not Garth Murray.
Right before Danny disappeared, I got a call. He told me he was sending a letter.
Jack sits with the man.
There weren't many details, but he said he and a guy named Gary Carr were in on a kidnapping scheme, brought in by somebody called David Waters.
David Waters?
Danny said these people they took were expecting to come out of it alive, but he wasn't so sure.
And you told all this to the police?
Sure. Yeah, but they didn't seem too keen on looking for a missing ex-con. I called Waters up, looking for Danny. He made up some excuse. And then he threatened to kill my family.
Jack looks up at the bearded man, then back to his notes.
Are you prepared to go on the record?
The man gives a hesitant nod.
Yeah.
A headline. Agents arrest former employee of O'Hare. David Waters' picture appears on the front page. Roy Collier slowly lowers the San Antonio Daily Journal with a stunned expression.
Mr. Waters, I'm not one for plea agreements, but I don't really have a say in the matter. You've discussed this with your lawyer?
San Antonio, Texas, 1998. David, in an orange jumpsuit, sits smoking in an interrogation room.
Go ahead.
Jack observes through a two-way mirror.
Gary was like a mad dog.
Danny awakens in the dark bedroom with a start and turns on the lamp. His eyes squint, adjusting to the light. He taps David's leg.
David.
David rips off the sleep mask as Danny crouches and heads for the door. In the kitchen, Robin is on the floor, slumped against a cabinet door. Danny looks and steps back.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh.
David glares toward Gary.
God damn it, Carl, what the fuck did you do?
David feels Robin's neck.
David? What are we gonna do now?
Calm down.
I knew something like this was gonna happen.
All right, we gotta get her body into the bedroom so they don't see her.
Madeline steps out of the bedroom.
Oh, no.
Madeline rushes toward David as he drags the body.
Oh, my God.
Gary starts to strangle Garth. David rushes over.
Danny, get
a panicked Danny watches his two companions struggle with the oversized Garth. Gary, beneath Garth, hands a black garbage bag to David. Madeline wields her cane like a bat, beating David across the back. He uses one hand to shove her back. Danny staggers to her while the other two suffocate Garth with the bag.
Don't look! Don't look!
David, his face contorted and teeth bared, presses on Garth's throat with everything he's got while Gary holds the large man in place. Danny restrains the shrieking Madeline. Gary pulls back more and more on the garbage bag as David holds Garth still. With her face against Danny's chest, Madeline paws the air toward Garth. Finally, Garth stops struggling. David eases back on his heels and pulls away the garbage bag. Madeline is open-mouthed, her face crumpling in grief as her hands grasp at the air in front of her. David looks back at her, eyes dark. He studies her for a moment. Her eyes frozen in anguish and her mouth open and contorted, she turns and sees her granddaughter's lifeless body. She stares up at David.
Do it.
David climbs off Garth's body, his shadow falling across her face. He steps behind her, looking down on her impassively. He snaps the opaque black bag over her face. The screen goes white. The white becomes the beam of a flashlight. A body in a sheet is dragged through Texas brush. In the uneven light, David watches Gary positioning a hacksaw over Robin's wrist. Gary looks at Danny standing in the shadows.
Yeah.
He nods toward the hacksaw.
Do it.
David's eyes drill down on Danny, who is on the verge of tears. Gary drops the hacksaw and steps away as the flashlight illuminates it and an arm.
Do it.
Danny stumbles up to the body and kneels, setting down his light.
Gary, I can't.
He holds the saw over her arm. David and Gary exchange cold glances. Danny throws an arm into a shallow grave with other body parts. David turns away. As Danny kneels, tossing dirt into the grave, Gary walks behind him. He hits the younger man's head with a shovel.
He couldn't be trusted to keep his mouth shut, so I had Gary take him out too.
Back in the interrogation room, he calmly smokes another cigarette.
What happened to the money?
David throws up his hands.
We kept the gold in a storage locker. And when we went to collect, it was gone. We'd been robbed. Fucking $5 lock. I never intended to kill her. But I can't say that I'm sorry that she's dead.
Jack's serious expression is reflected in the glass, now on TV.
We're live here at Camp Wood, where confessed murderer David Waters is leading police to that spot where he buried the bodies of Madeline Murray O'Hare, her son and granddaughter, on that gruesome night in 1995. There were rumors that they had fled to New Zealand.
Well, at least she didn't go unnoticed.
Jack looks from the TV where a grave of bones is shown to Collier.
She would have appreciated that.
Later, Bill stands before three urns and an open crypt. A green, tree-swept cemetery stretches out behind him. Everything goes black as a caretaker affixes a plate over the opening. Bill stands back as the caretaker seals the crypt and pauses for a moment, hands folded.
Please, no prayers. She wouldn't have wanted that.
Bill turns and walks away from the tall, white, rectangular mausoleum. He slouches, hands in his pockets.
Does it worry you that when you die that there is not going to be nirvana or whatever you care to call it?
When I die, I don't want some religious nut shoving a rosary up my ass or communion wafer down my throat. But I wouldn't mind a small corner of the outdoors where the sun can filter through the trees and lay a gentle hand on my face. Three words on my tombstone. Woman. I've loved being a woman. Grandmother. I've loved being a grandmother. And mother. I have loved being a mother. That's what I'd like to be remembered foremost. That's what I'd like it to say on my tombstone, but being who I am, I'm not expecting I'll be having a goddamn tombstone.
On the TV, she shakes her head, smiling ironically and glancing away, then back. Text beside a photo of the real Gary Carr in manacles reads, Gary Carr received a life sentence for his involvement in the kidnapping and murder of the Murray O'Hares. Beside a photo of David Waters in a suit and sunglasses, in a plea deal, David Waters was sentenced to 68 years. He died in prison of lung cancer in 2003. The stolen money was never recovered. Beside a photo of the real Bill Murray, as the chairman of the Religious Freedom Coalition, William Murray Jr. now works to bring prayer back into public schools. In a photo of Madeline flanked by Garth and Robin, text reads, Now operating for over 50 years, Madeline's American Atheist continues her fight for the separation of church and state. Directed by Tommy O'Haver. Written by Tommy O'Haver and Irene Turner. Producers, Max Handelman and Elizabeth Banks. Producer, Laura Rister. Co-producer, Amy Jarvella. Executive producer, Ian Brick. Executive producer, Tommy O'Haver. Associate Producer, Irene Turner. Melissa Leo. Josh Lucas. Michael Chernus. Rory Cochran. Vincent Carthacer. Sally Kirkland. Adam Scott. Juno Temple. Alex Frost. Brandon Michael Smith. And Peter Fonda. Casting by Carrie Barden and Paul Schnee. Director of Photography, Armando Salas. Production Designer, David L. Snyder. Film Editor, Michael X. Flores. Costume Designer, Molly O'Haver Moore. Music by Alan Lazar. Music Supervisor, Amina Raymer. A film by Tommy O'Haver. More credits roll. No person or entity associated with this motion picture received payment or anything of value or entered into any agreement in connection with the depiction of tobacco products. Ownership of this motion picture is protected by copyright and other applicable laws of the United States of America and other countries. Any unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition of this motion picture, including soundtrack, could result in criminal prosecution as well as civil liability. While this film is inspired by real events, some characters are composites or inventions, and a number of incidents depicted in this film are fictional. Any similarity to any person, living or dead, is not intended and purely coincidental. AMHW Productions, LLC is the author of this motion picture for the purpose of copyright and other laws. The Most Hated Woman in America, copyright 2016, AMHW Productions, LLC, all rights reserved. Letters pop out from a white background, then turn red. Netflix.